Welcome to Free Fire Radio. The phone lines are open at 530-710-0765. And now, Free Fire Radio is about to commence.
Yeah, good afternoon. Oh, turn me down a little bit here. Hey, good afternoon. Welcome to Free Fire Radio here on our town hall meetings on Friday, where we send out throughout the world our show. That's right, throughout the world. There's people right now in Zambezi that are listening to the show. I'm not sure what their name is or even if they understand what we're saying, but they get the idea that we're here, we represent freedom, and we represent we the people. Our phone line here is 530-710-0765. So if you've got a phone, call in and you can talk to our guest today. Today, as you know, we try to provide a forum for the people that are wanting to represent us. And originally today we were going to have a debate between District Attorney Jerry Bonito and his challenger, Steve Carlton. We've had to put that off. Mr. Carlton asked to put this off for a few weeks while he was gaining information. He was trying to obtain information. It was not as easy as he thought it was going to be from the city clerk. So there's been some Freedom of Information Acts filed and such so that after the information is released, we'll have that debate. But our guest today, as we had on at 8 o'clock, is a candidate for our Shasta County District 5 supervisor's position. And it's Chris Young. Good morning, Chris, or good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Carl. Where's Linda?
Linda has laryngitis, and she sounds a lot like, you remember the our gang comedies, and you had Froggy, that's her. That's Linda right now. And it's best for her not to be out in this type of weather.
I always liked Froggy.
Well, and probably people would much rather have her here than me anyway. But then again, it works out. Chris has joined us today at 8 o'clock on the show, and he was talking about why he wants to be the supervisor for the 5th District. And usually what we do is we start out with give you a couple minutes for you to just introduce yourself, tell everybody where you come from, and then we'll start in getting into the specific questions about the supervisor position. So, Chris, tell us about yourself.
Thank you, Carl. I am Chris Young. I'm 54 years old. I've been a resident of Shasta County since 1973. I was born and raised in Crescent City, where the weather looks similar to this every day, but it rains, and not just a little mist like we're having here. And moved over here in 1973, went to Shasta College, and have eked out a living in Shasta County ever since then. I'm married, have four children and two grandchildren. My kids are, this year they're going to be 30, 28, 20, and 18. And I've got grandchildren that are 6 and 3. Running for Shasta County Supervisor because I want to try to make a difference. I've been selling real estate in Shasta County for 20 years and working with clients, trying to work through the system to develop land, build buildings, add on to buildings. And it seems like you're always up against some bureaucracy that's telling you, no, you can't do this, no, you can't do that, you can't do it this way, you can't do it that way. And so I just, over the years, took an interest in trying to help people work through the system. And some of my friends and clients started encouraging me to run for office and get in there and try and make a difference from the other side of the counter.
Okay. You know, a lot of times when people, I was talking to somebody the other day that had contemplated running for office, and he said, you know, it's funny, every time I ask one of my friends, hey, should I run for office? They'd always go, yeah, you'd be great. Yeah, this has nothing to do with you, of course, Chris. And it wasn't Chris I was talking to. And he says he finds out that, he said there was only one person that said, you like people to like you. And you run for office at any one time, 50% just not going to like you. You know, in fact, it may be sometime if you make a hard decision, you may have 90% of the people that voted in this county that when they see you, they don't like you. Now, can you handle that? And he thought about it, and he decided not to run. Because, he says, you're right. I'm I'm into this type of life that I just really wouldn't like most people not liking me. And it's tough. It is tough because, you know, you're questioned every time you make a decision. And you'll have to make decisions. Our politicians should be able to make decisions that are hard. And they're not going to be liked because they make the hard decisions. And unfortunately, that's in a short, right now in my opinion, that's in short supply right now of politicians wanting to do the right thing, making the right decisions, but they're afraid to offend media, mainly special interest groups, political action groups, and their party. So this is a great way for people to get to know the candidate so they can ask you those questions and look at you. And you're not just a blurb on the radio station, you know, an ad or an ad in a print magazine or anything like that. This is where people can really ask questions. So, having been on my soapbox at this point, questions for our candidate here. I can tell you right now, one of the questions I have is, what do you expect to change immediately when you get in there?
Well, first off, Shasta County needs to have a sheriff's department that has deputies on the street, and when you dial 911 at 3 in the morning, there should be somebody out there that can respond when you're in the jurisdiction covered by the sheriff's department. And when any law enforcement agency picks up, as Carl likes to call them, the bad guys, picks up someone and introduces them to the jailers, they shouldn't be back out on the street in 45 minutes, regardless of which jurisdiction you live in. If the Highway Patrol or Anderson Police is picking up a drunk driver and dropping him off at jail, he shouldn't be back out on the streets because we don't have a budget in place to keep the jail open and lock up the bad guys. That'd be one of the first things I would work on is prioritizing law enforcement, because that's the first order of business for government is to protect the citizens.
Good afternoon, question. Chris. How are you?
Great.
I talked to you this morning on the radio, by the way. And it's been my experience that three things get people elected in Shasta County. The first one is background in the community, people who know you and see how you are. The next one is personality. And the third has always been the strength of the opposition that you're running against.
Good points.
This year, there's a fourth. And the fourth one is a successful program to get Shasta County back on track. We are in difficult straits, dire straits, economically. And we need to be, as we talked about this morning, promoted outside the community to bring people here to create jobs. I think it's very important that you have a designated program that we can all address and see where it's going. It's one thing to say we need to prioritize the police and have them be on the street, but what are we going to do to create jobs in the community and make this a better place to live again?
That's a very good question. And, you know, when I say we need to prioritize the law enforcement, it's still got to be number one, because if we're advertising across the state or around the world on the internet, if somebody Googles Redding, California, Shasta County, California, and the top returns they get in the search is high crime, gangs, repeat offender, drunk drivers, and so forth. Well, that's not going to encourage anybody to come to town. So first off, we've still got to protect the citizens and keep the crime in check. Then second, there's no one way to promote business. It's a whole box full of different policies, advertising with different agencies, better promotion of Shasta County on the internet, better participation with the Economic Development Corporation, through every avenue that you can think of. There's no one thing that will bring business to this town. I worked a couple of days showing land to site locator for Intel quite a few years ago. It's probably 6 years ago now when they were looking for a site for a factory. Would have been a couple thousand jobs for Shasta County. And nobody even knew this guy was in town. And why was he in town? His daughter had a job here. She was a veterinarian tech and was working for one of the veterinarians here in town. He and his wife were in town to visit daughter, and heard a little bit about the proposed Stillwater Business Park and wanted to go look around town and see what kind of sites we had. So you never know where the lead is going to come from, and everybody in this room and everybody in the county should be promoting Shasta County as a place to move to and do business with all their friends and relatives. And there's more to it than just bringing businesses in from outside the area. We need to encourage and assist local businesses to expand instead of getting in their way, stepping on their toes, and being the straw that breaks the camel's back. Follow-up question. I think you need a microphone.
In regards to what you just said, Sharon had just pointed out to me that you're absolutely correct. We need to encourage the seeds of growth within our own community, encourage people to grow and expand. I mean, Carl is a perfect example of it. He took the steps to start a new radio station, and at a time that was trepidatious, to say the least. And I think that he hasn't run into as many obstacles as some of the other businesses haven't, because he is more visual and out in front of the community. But those who are behind the scenes don't have as easy a ride as Carl has found. And I'm not saying yours was easy, Carl. I'm just saying that you've had a little more cooperation than many. I'd like to see some smoothing of the path and possibly an ombudsman set up at the county courthouse to help people through their starting up of businesses and moving on to better things.
That would be an excellent idea.
You know, that's a great idea, that because we're getting ready to start a justice center here in the city and in the county via the DA's office and a couple of places. What they're doing is they're putting 37 organizations that they're there to help people that are victims of family violence, people that are, you know, that are having domestic violence issues and everything. And what they're doing is, and this started down in San Diego, it's nationwide. In fact, it's throughout the world now. They're putting all that under a one roof so people can go in and be helped, where they don't have to travel all throughout the city on buses, because most people don't have their own transportation that are in that situation. I think that's a great idea. Is something that Shasta County and the city can do is draw from people they have already. Do not start another bureaucracy. But to have something that when somebody comes in and wants to do business, it's a one-stop. And they give them all the rules and all the regulations one time instead of, like as you pointed out, well, here I am, this is what I want to do, and they go, no, this won't fit the regulations. So you have to go back, you come back again, and nobody's helping you with this. This is ridiculous. We should be able to have something like this that says to our business community, we're here to help you. We're not here just to take your money and to pay, you know, pay the salaries of people. We're here to help you so you grow, you prosper. You know, I don't mean to be on the soapbox again, but I would hope that whoever is representing us would think that this might be an idea of merit.
That's the thinking outside the box.
And as John points out, it's thinking outside the box. But it's just helping people. It's helping people get started.
And every business is regulated and bumps up against the local, state, and federal government at some level. Your business, I have no idea what hoops you had to jump through to get up and running, and you're doing some innovative, cool things here. Leaping through flaming hoops. That's what I was just going to say. Is the you know, you're regulated at the federal level. The airwaves that are all around us are regulated by the federal government, and so to the casual observer, it looks like you just turned on the lights and turned on the microphone and went into business. Just that easy. but you know, if you'd had to build a building or cut a tree or subdivide some property, you would have had some other issues that were a little more tangible and people could wrap their hands around and wrap their mind around and see what kind of problems you're up against. Next question.
Good morning, Chris. I think that the idea of the fire, of the police department, I mean the sheriff's department, being the first one funded, but the second one funded, I think we ought to think about is the road departments and keeping the roads clear and the culverts open and things like this, and then on down, and then consolidating the rest of the departments into one until you have enough enough business and enough taxes to cover it.
Well, that makes sense, and you know there definitely needs to be a hierarchy, a prioritization of where the funds go. And you know, my point on the radio this morning was that you can't just keep cutting every department 10%, 10% here and another 10% next, you know, 6 months down the road or whatever. At some point, you've got to prioritize the jail, the sheriff's department, roads, infrastructure. They affect more people on a daily basis. And, you know, some of these other departments, you know, unfortunately, if funds keep diminishing, may have to be consolidated. Some departments may have to be closed down altogether. The road department, road maintenance could be totally privatized. There's no reason for the county to own a shovel and a paving machine. That should all be put out to bid and handled by the private sector. Next question.
Chris, there's been some news lately about this organization called Shasta Forward. What is Shasta Forward? Were they elected they use like $600,000 or something to plan for our future? Can you comment on that effort there?
Well, Shasta Forward, my understanding is, was a joint effort between Caltrans and some other state agencies and the RTPA, Regional Transportation, whatever RTPA stands for, planning, yeah. And the Shasta Forward guys got a grant from the state to do this study, and they did some modeling and put out a questionnaire that they hope that you know all the over 18 crowd in Shasta County would respond to, and they ended up getting response from you know a third of 1% of the population.
A third of 1%.
Yeah, 0.3% responded to the survey. For you know, right or wrong, that's you know they ended up spending about $547, I think, per respondent. That's a pretty expensive survey.
But I could have done that for half. No, I could have gotten more.
I would have. I would have loved to have bid that job. I could have done it for a lot less. It's supposedly a plan for the future. Get the public involved in helping decide which way we grow and don't grow I don't think that there's that many people that are interested in trying to make the decision. They probably just didn't market the thing correctly. If they only reached, you know, 0.3 of 1% of the population, that's a marketing problem. And if they had $750,000 or $745,000 grant, they should have been able to knock on every door and get a response from more than 1%.
You could have paid people $10 for a response. And they would have filled it out.
Oh, yeah.
Here's $5, fill out this response.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll mail this response in, and we'll send you $5 back.
Don't even have to mail it.
Here's the stamp.
Sit at the mall. Sit outside, yeah. Safeway. Here you go.
So some people say that it was a thinly veiled attempt to backdoor taxes, property taxes, to fund Interstate 5 widening and improvements. Some people think that it's a backdoor around planning, trying to create a regional planning instead of single jurisdiction planning. And nobody really knows for sure what Shasta Forward
is about.
So
what are the results of this then? Is anything being done with it?
The RTPA accepted the final report of the Shasta Forward team, and it'll probably go nowhere from there. Other than the proponents will try to spin that into another grant, and remember, grants are your tax dollars. It's just taken from you, filtered, laundered through Sacramento, and spent on somebody else.
Okay.
And then they'll take off and do another study.
Big question right now in Shasta County and the city of Redding is marijuana. Even though, as we talked about today, I find it somewhat, for me, amusing that we're talking about marijuana so much in the city of Redding. We got 30 to 40 marijuana communes here. One of our listeners, in fact, it was John, says we've got 30 to 40 or 37. And you have 31 pharmacies and up to 40 marijuana dispensaries. You know, I'm thinking Reading has got a lot of problems here pretty soon. And then, and 800 churches. So we're into sin and drugs right here in River City. But something has to be done. I mean, they've just decided on having a moratorium.
Why?
Well, they've decided on a moratorium for a decision. Do you agree with that?
The Board of Supervisors agreed to basically put off making a hard decision for another 45 days, at which point they will most likely agree to put off making a decision and implementing anything for up to 12 more months while they wait and see what's happening in state court and federal court with various lawsuits pertaining to this can of worms that was opened with 215 and SB 420, the Compassionate Use Act and the supposed clarification, the SB 420, of how jurisdictions can deal with medical marijuana cooperatives. And they're avoiding making the hard decisions. You know, the planning department came up. County staff came up with their proposals. The district attorney and the sheriff departments weighed in, and they've got the facts in front of them. In my opinion, they should have made a decision, but they didn't make a decision. They put it off for 45 days. And it would be nice, in my opinion, if they would make a decision and go with something and fine-tune it as the laws change. But quit leaving people in limbo as to whether or not they can operate a storefront medical marijuana co-op, whether or not they can grow a plant in their closet or in their backyard. You know, make a decision and go with it.
It seems to me that they have made a decision to let commerce just find its own way. As I said, 31 pharmacies and 40 marijuana dispensaries.
Well, again, you're talking about 31 co-ops.
I'm talking about 31 standard pharmacies.
I'm sorry. Up to 40 medical marijuana co-ops in Redding. And I'm running for a seat in a county supervisor seat, which has no jurisdiction over the co-ops in Redding. So just, we're talking about two different things. I'm happy to talk about what's happening in Redding and
that
statewide. But
first of all, I've got to say that I don't understand for the life of me why you're running. I wouldn't, under these circumstances, run for anything.
My wife asked the same question.
Were
you talking
sure
to her?
Did. There is virtually no money in the county to institute new programs. There's no money to expand existing programs that could be doing us any good, and all there really is going to be doing is cutting back personnel, agencies, and activities in the county. Somebody mentioned the roads need to be a prioritized. As far as I'm concerned, between healthcare, fire, and the roads, that's about all you're going to be able to handle. There is no money. And until we get that problem taken care of, however we do, if we do, I don't see that there's any solutions to this. And like I said, I really can't understand why you're running. But good luck to you.
Thank you. I mean, the solution is a better economy. And it would be nice if it came from the outside, but we're going to have to do what we can from the inside. We're going to have to do all that we can to create more jobs here, keep more money here, refuse to run programs that are mandated but not funded. At some point, we're just going to have to thumb our nose at Sacramento and say, if you don't send us the money to cover this program, then we're not going to do it.
How many programs are unfunded that we're mandated to do, would you say?
I don't know if any are unfunded right now. Many are behind in funding. The job's been done, the money's been spent, and the backfill hasn't come in from Sacramento. They're running 3 months, 6 months, 18 months behind in paying for programs that are mandated. And it varies from program to program. I don't have the specifics on that.
Is there any chance that the county would ever say that we're not going to do something unless you fund it?
At some point, I think they have to. We don't print money. We're not mining gold on county owned land. At some point we can't do the job. If we don't have the funding, we're going to have to say no.
I know everybody laughs when I say this, but you know, as long as they have marijuana legal as medicinal, and Sheriff Pasinko's got all those people and the extra money to go collect it, well, we shouldn't become like the Shasta County Wowie, you know, capital of California. But I guess that's too far out.
I would hate to see that happen.
Yeah, well, it's one way of making $1 million a week on it. Questions out here. Okay, the other thing too then is the climate of business, and we keep talking climate of business, and it's an important thing, is we have so many rules and regulations at the county and city and state level. Is there any idea that, you know, we talked about, you know, having a one spot you could go to that, you know, that somebody wanting to start a business, they could go to talk to somebody and they would have everybody there. It'd be kind of like somebody to assist you instead of putting roadblocks in front of you. Is there any way that there can be a time or whatever set aside, you know, so part of the bureaucracy set aside to go through all these rules and regulations that have been on the books probably for decades and go through them and see which ones really are harmful, which ones are helpful, which ones are at least neutral, and then try to have them eliminated, the harmful ones?
Well, I think that could be done, and it's to achieve that, you would have to break it up into pieces. And to just say you and I are going to sit down and start going through the books, we could be at it for months and not get halfway through it, I don't think. And then you've got all the legal ramifications and so forth.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like the healthcare program, trying to change everything at one time. But if you break it down like you say, I mean, you know, okay, so it could be regulations concerning construction. Or
right.
Regulations concerning your landscaping, which seems to be a big problem. Regulations that say you can't have a sign in front of your business, or what kind of sign is it? I mean, these are just things that just slow business down or harmful to business, and yet it continues to go on.
Well, you've just got to attack the problem and say no. I'm currently on the planning commission. We had a proposal for a new franchise drive-through restaurant, and wouldn't have been in front of the planning commission at all. It was zoned right, the size and everything was fine, and they didn't want a variance on setbacks from the street or anything. They end up in front of the planning commission because the sign the lighted sign on the drive-through had 102 square inches. Too much surface, too big of a sign. Sorry, you've got to do a different sign. Well, this was a national franchise. They've got one company in the United States that makes all of their signs, and that all of their signs are the same. They're all the same size. I think they had 367 stores, and this was going to be the 368th store. And here in Shasta County, the answer was, sorry, have a different sign made. We don't want your sign. And you know, I fought that from, you know, fought for them from the get-go, got voted down, and they were told to go get a different sign. And then, amazingly enough, 6 weeks later, the ordinance changed, and their sign was okay. But there was just, we're not going to give. There's no flexibility here. You know, we don't care if you got 367 other stores nationwide and you're a successful business. We're in control here. And that's the kind of bureaucracy that is just damaging the business sends a horrible message to other businesses that might want to locate here.
Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, that's stupid. I mean, it's one thing to have a problem because you're overcome by, you know, you know, forces that are too big for you to fight, or that you don't have enough time because it's just, you know, maybe it's taken. But to do something stupid, to keep businesses and to irritate businesses that want to come in just by doing stupid things, then, you know, maybe we deserve not to get businesses in here. But what I'd like to think is that we have common sense, and that we would be able to say, yeah, you know what, that maybe doesn't fit, but, you know, the tax base on this is going to be $150,000 a year. Maybe we should have them in.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we need jobs at every level. You hear people complain all the time about, well, we're too much retail, and we need better jobs. Well, yes, we need better jobs. I'd love it if somebody came to town and opened a business and hired 1,000 people that paid $50 an hour. That'd be fantastic. What would that do to minimum wage jobs? Well, a lot of those minimum wage job holders would go to work at the $50 an hour place, and that would open up a lot of minimum wage retail jobs. You know, we need people out there working at minimum wage jobs. I've got teenagers that are in the workforce, and everybody's got to have a place to start. And you can't start at $50 an hour. Where'd the microphone go?
No, Chris, here's a question for you. We see those kinds of problems that have to be overcome for business to come here. But we have what kinds of things can you do as a supervisor that will help facilitate new business to come? Say, for instance, I have two different gentlemen that I've worked with over the last year, they opened... one opened a little coffee smoothie shop, and by the time he paid all the permits and things, it was $150,000. Now, he was employing people, and you're like, okay, let me get this straight. We're gonna charge this guy $150,000. Now, okay, let's say that I'm coming here with a big business that's going to put up 100 jobs or 200 jobs in the manufacturing zone. What am I going to look at? I would be going out and telling, okay, what's the average cost of a guy coming in here? Well, this coffee shop, they just wanted a small coffee shop to start, and it cost them $150,000. What? Okay, well, let's go back and investigate those in Oklahoma, because they're giving us, let's see, oh, they wanted to give us 10 acres of land, and they wanted to give us free taxes for 5 years, and they have 15% unemployment, so there's a big workforce. Do you see the problem? And that's what we're technically already going against, is these small towns, particularly in the Midwest, where they're saying, look, just come here. We've got things for you. They often have buildings for you. Here, we're on the other side of things, going like the sign that you were just mentioning, which is ridiculous. How are we going to overcome that? How are we going to make a plan, not just to change those little laws, but how are you going to make a plan to say to the other guy, hey, come on?
Well, we need a business-friendly attitude from the top down. It's not the person on the other side of the counter at the building and planning department that's making the rules. They're doing what they're told to do. They open up the book and they say, well, it says here in black and white that you've got to have a shrubbery every 18 inches in your landscape plan, and that you've got to have this size of a grease trap for your restaurant, otherwise you can't open. And they're you know, the shrubbery in the landscape plan is something that is easily should be flexible. When you run into things like a grease trap for a new restaurant or a coffee shop or whatever, then you're running into state laws and federal laws and sewage disposal issues and so forth. So maybe there's a little less flexibility there, but everywhere where there's some flexibility, where there could be some flexibility, we should be exercising that flexibility to be business friendly and try to get the doors open with that business, get them employing people. We're going to have a better tax base to run the county and provide the services that they should be providing if we've got jobs to fund that, as opposed to a one-time fee that maybe causes you to not even open your business.
Right.
If you start looking at $150,000 in fees in order to open a coffee shop.
Right.
You decide not to open, so you don't build
That's
the building.
Typical.
You don't build the building. You don't employ the people. There's no sales tax and income tax generated, and we've all lost.
Right. One last thing, then. Do you foresee any plan then to start facilitating other businesses come? Like you were talking about Intel, hey, they want to come put a plant. Someone should have been on the horse there to say, listen, if you're really serious about coming here, let us make some provisions. Is there anyone doing any of that kind of stuff?
Well, there are people, and again, that may not be consolidated in one office behind one desk. There's a multitude of places that you might run into that information and that encouragement, we would be better served if we had one point person. But then when you put all the responsibility into one person, then you run into the issue of maybe that person being biased. There was I recently was told about a big box store that not in the Shasta County jurisdiction, it was in the Redding jurisdiction, but a big box store that in this economic climate wanted to come to Redding, and they sat down and talked with person they thought was the influence person in the jurisdiction, and thought that they were going to get all the straight scoop, and that person didn't like that big box store and told them to go away. Period. 600 and some mostly part-time jobs, but construction of the site, a site that's underutilized now, probably close to $4 million in traffic improvements in the immediate area, an area of town that could use some infrastructure improvements, and this one person told them to go away. Well, fortunately, 6 months later, they've come back and started talking, going through the process and making a formal application, and now maybe you might hear about something in the news sometime soon about that development. Yes, sir.
Hi, Chris.
Two things I'd like to ask you about, and maybe you can educate me about how this process happened, that we got in Shasta County $500,000 worth of stimulus money, and we decided to take that money, and maybe it was earmarked, so maybe you can educate me, but how we got $500,000 of stimulus money and we're going to pave a river trail when we have all these other things that are a bigger priority. If you could just tell me about that, maybe, and your opinion. And the other thing, and I know it's not maybe in your area of expertise or your district, but talk to me about Stillwater and how that would serve to bring more people in as business.
Okay. Well, first things first. My understanding of what happened, how we got to this paving of the river trail upstream from the Ribbon Bridge on the, what is that, that's the west side of the river. That's a BLM issue. And I don't believe that actually came through the county at any level other than just Are you going to do this at a in a manner that meets, you know, safety standards and so forth? I think my understanding is that's totally a BLM issue. So is one government agency applying for money from a different government agency and going out and right or wrong, whether I have no idea, you know, how you feel about that being paved, but it will create some jobs. And well, that could be true. You know, hopefully they'll employ some local people. But, you know, and again, that's, you know, we're talking about a few weeks worth of work and then it's done. But that will increase access to that area for people that don't have access to that area. And you know, I realize there are some people that would just as soon see that portion of the trail stay the way that it is now. It seems like wasn't that many years ago that it wasn't developed at all. And maybe there were some people that wanted it left undeveloped in the first place. So, you know, things change. It's government land, and I think that we should, you know, attempt to give access to people. What was your second question? Stillwater. Stillwater is what seemed like a great idea when it started. If we could have built it for the original costs, and if the economy had stayed the way that it was, and if Stillwater would have been a great project. If you had a crystal ball and could have seen today from the day that it was first proposed, I don't think anybody would have voted for it. They ran into ridiculous environmental issues out there that supposedly nobody foresaw. You know, started off with 800, 900 acres, something like that, and ended up with 400 acres, or, you know, they lost close to half of what they could use out there because of vernal pools and a scattering of environmentally sensitive bugs and grasses and so forth. And, you know, so maybe that was the wrong place to even attempt anything. In my mind, it would have made more sense, and I said so from the start, that it would have made more sense. Sorry, watching an accident in progress here, and it's just slow motion. It would have made more sense to develop an industrial park on a railroad, you know, served by a railroad spur. I questioned from day one about, you know, what kind of industry can operate in today's climate and be competitive on the world market. And truck everything. It's much cheaper to have a railroad spur. That's why Knauf is where Knauf is. They've got a railroad spur.
In answer to that question, the entertainment industry, of course.
One question.
A question as to what type of industry can operate out of Stillwater successfully.
Sure.
The entertainment industry. Video production, film production. Entertainment of all sorts, and it's been proposed. Now, a couple of things. The EDC, or Economic Development Corporation, which has, as far as I'm concerned, been pretty much a failure. They haven't developed the economy. They haven't encouraged industry to come here, and they've got involved in an awful lot of personal rancoring with people about things that are going to be done or not be done. They wanted to purchase Lithia with monies of the local community here and move them out to another facility and pay them to do this. I know that the EDC is not a county agency. It's a city agency, isn't it? Is it a county agency?
EDC is Economic Development
Corporation.
Is a nonprofit organization that's funded by the cities and
Reading.
The county,
yeah,
and
okay.
And grant funds from the state, which is all of us.
And they seem to be spending a lot of money doing something that doesn't appear to be working. And that's my point. But again, let's go back to Stillwater for just a minute. We have had a company in place, I believe they're out of either San Francisco or Oakland, that is supposed to be promoting Stillwater. They are the ones that are the real estate agent for it and the promotion
right,
for it.
Right, there's a broker that's based out of the Bay Area.
There hasn't been one lot that an option's been taken on. Not one. We've had them in place now for more than a year, probably more than 2 or 3 years. Back from 2005, I think, is when they got started on this thing and have accomplished nothing. And yet we continue to employ them or keep them on. I believe they have some kind of an agreement on percentages, but also they've got some type of funding from the city and county to promote this.
I'm not aware if they're on retainer or if they're on strictly commission. I don't know what the arrangement is with that brokerage firm.
Once again, we seem to be real great here at defining problems and not a whole lot at defining solutions. We have a facility I talked to Leonard Modi about yesterday. The detention center that is held by the Sheriff's Department that used to be the extension of the jail. That's now vacant, but we still have to maintain it. Nobody's living there. Nobody's housed there or anything of the kind. It's a great facility. It has land available for gardening. We could grow marijuana out there and sell it all over the place. But realistically, there are funds available from the federal stimulus package to create Conservation Corps facilities. If we moved the excess homeless people or the people looking to find a place to be and develop ways for them to be trained to do things on that facility with federal money, it would house them, it would maintain the facility, it would reduce our overhead, it would be some form of a positive solution to getting out of this mess we're in and get some of the... Even if it was nothing other than just kids coming out of high school that didn't have anything else to do but a place to live and train to be firemen, to be anything. But there is money available, and this is where we need to address our situations.
Well, I'm all for vocational training for people of all ages. And our youth doesn't get vocational training in high school anymore, in grade school like they used to. Those programs have all been cut back and replaced with how to handle your emotions and how to groom your dog. And as far as training and housing homeless, that's a whole other problem. Not all these people want to be housed or trained. But I would be in favor of vocational training for people of all ages, and I'm in favor of Conservation Corps and employing people that just want a job and are willing to go out and cut fire lines and do clean up and repairs and build footbridges and learn a trade and a skill and do something good for the community while they're at it. I'm all for that. Whether or not that facility down there is the right place to do it, I don't know. We may end up with a tent city down there for overflow for the jail if the state starts releasing prisoners from state prisons by the thousands. So it's I'm not sure what we'll end up doing with that facility specifically.
We're getting ready to wrap it up here, and there's been some really good comments about. Why would somebody want to run right now with the conditions we're in? In the last 5 minutes here, why don't you give us your thoughts on this? The first thing is that you would do if you were king, much like Jeff is.
Czar.
Jeff, if you were czar and you had the final say, the things you would change immediately. The things that changes that would come in the second tier, because obviously something has to be changed. And frankly, I don't want to seem like a pessimist, but it's five people voting on this, and it's taken a while to get us into this thing. And we can blame economic conditions. The whole country's like this, but there's more to it than that. We have set ourselves up for this. So if we've set ourselves up for this, what can we do to get ourselves out of it? Yeah, there's some things we can't affect, but there are a lot of things. So you're czar for a week. What are you going to change, Chris?
Well, if I was czar for a week, do I get a magic wand too, or does it have?
You got to deal with the economy the way it is. You got to deal with the economy the way it is.
Wait a minute, there's some votes out here for the magic wand. I get that too. Yeah, I mean, there's to fix all the problems in 1 week. The best thing you could do would be to close down government for a week, and except for police and fire, and quit passing new laws, quit taxing and feeing business and individuals out of business and out of their homes. I mean, if you only had a week to fix things, the best thing you could probably do is...
No, I didn't say you had a week. What I said is, in a week, that what are the first things that you would do, and then, you know, in the tiering? Well, but I've heard some I like. You know, you've got to go back and go over the things that are being taxed and feed and see what you can change. I mean, it's a well-known fact that we've had businesses start to come in this town and they've actually bought property here. And when the fee structure hit them, it doubled the price of everything. They just backed up. They gave up their contracts, because who wants to pay another $80,000, $100,000 on top of what you're paying already because of fees?
The $80,000 to $100,000 would be minimal for lots and lots of projects. There are approved projects on the books around town that have $5 to $10 million worth of off-site improvements tacked onto their conditions of approval, and it requiring street lights and intersection improvements more than a mile away from the site that you're trying to develop. And the law says that in California, if you want to build a house and impact the traffic on this street, you know, for as long as that house is there and have an impact on the amount of water that's available in the neighborhood and the amount of sewer capacity, that you can't spread that cost around to the people that are already there. Well, that's fair. New development should pay their cost, and the same thing with a major subdivision or a shopping center. There's no reason why you that are already here should foot the bill for improving the intersection at the corner because somebody wants to put a shopping center a block away. The new development should pay their fair share of the impacts, but at some point it reaches the ridiculous. Just because the people in the neighborhood a mile away might want to use the new shopping center instead of driving 5 miles or 10 miles to the old shopping center doesn't mean that the new shopping center should be improving all of the roads everywhere, you know, for, you know, mile, 2 miles in every direction. At some point you reach a point of ridiculousness where it's not fair and not right. So how do you stop that? It starts at the top. As a supervisor, you propose that we back off on development fees. We back off, we ratchet down the traffic impact fees. We ratchet down the connection fees. We put a distance limit on the off-site improvements. We're not going to require off-site improvements beyond, you know, a certain reasonable distance. And yes, sir.
The question is that would you propose that if you were elected?
I will propose multiple business friendly proposals, the changes in the fee and tax structure. Absolutely.
This will be the last question, and so it'll be mine. My show. I know that sounds horrible, but we do
So you're the czar
who runs,
now?
You know, I've heard this is that, you know, who runs the county? And you hear the same thing for the city, the supervisors or the staff? Would you take a good look at who's in charge of the divisions and the different sections there to see if perhaps that they are carrying out the will of the supervisors and don't have their own agenda?
Many jurisdictions throughout the state have run amok staff. Cities and counties have bureaucrats who are doing the homework, supposedly, and making proposals, and you end up with the elected officials that are just rubber stamping what staff recommends. And when you're sitting up there in the podium, the dais, you're looking at a staff report, there's the history of the proposal at hand, there's the issues at hand, and then there's always the staff recommendation. Staff recommends that we deny this application. Staff recommends that we accept this recommendation. And you rarely see the elected officials turn that around and say no to staff. And that's not the way that it should be. Staff wasn't elected by the public. Staff is not responsible to the public. Staff can only be fired by the Board of Supervisors. The supervisors should do their own homework and be knowledgeable on the subject and be prepared to take a firm stand and do what's right for the taxpayer and not just the whims of somebody in the back room that says we should do it this way or that way.
That answered my question. Hey, Chris, we'd like to really thank you for being here. If you got, we got a couple minutes. Yeah. Last thought here before we have to say goodbye.
Vote for Chris Young, District 5.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Believe it or not, there are people that don't want to appear on the show that are in elected offices. And it's not like we tie them down and rip their fingernails out. But to me, if they don't want to appear on the radio show and they don't want to go in front of the people that have elected them, there's something wrong. There's something wrong, and whether they are either running opposed or unopposed, there's something wrong. If they're running unopposed, they still should want to come out there and put what they stand for in front of us. And if they don't, why is that? I mean, I don't understand that. We're going to try to have every one of our politicians, anybody that's running for office, they're always welcome on our show. And we always like to have them on a Friday so we can bring them down then for our town hall, because it's kind of like the question that was asked about the Shasta Forward or whatever that thing was with 3.3% of 1%. You have a lot of the same people here in our meetings. There's always somebody new. We always welcome new people. It's always getting just a little bit bigger. The thing is that these are the people that care about our city and care about our county and care about our country. These are the people you need to reach, because these are the ones that will work. These are the ones that will work for change. So thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you.
Join us next week for the next Friday's version of Free Fire Radio right here on our internet show. Thank you.